I want to welcome Agile XRM to the podcast. I've known the people at Agile XRM for the past 12 years. I've seen how their business process management tool can add massive value to complex organizational processes in sectors such as finance and government. If you have complex processes or a need for dialogues on the Power Platform or Dynamics 365, take a look at how this BPM tool can add value. You can find them at agilexrm.com or check out the show notes for more details. Hey everyone, welcome to the Power Platform Show. Today we have Joe Griffin, the Director of Solo Cloud Solutions from the UK, talking about Microsoft Azure and the relationship to the Power Platform. Full show notes for this episode can be found at nz365guy.com/226. Now let's get on with the show. Hey Joe, welcome to the Power Platform Show.
Hello there, great to be here.
Mate, you're on the other side of the world right now. Did we just work out at what time of the day is it there for you?
Coming up to 9 p.m. at night, so
9 p.m.
Just about ready to get my head down, I think.
Yeah, okay, and I'm at 8 a.m. in the morning, so coming up on. So yeah, we're at the flip time zones. I kind of miss being in the UK, and all, of course, you've got a lovely summer at the moment.
Yeah, is it winter down there for you guys at the moment? Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's winter. Yeah, totally opposite to the UK. Mm.
That must be fun with Christmas then, I guess.
Yeah, but when you've been brought up and Christmas is always, in our case, in summer, it's really weird because we're colonized by the Brits, of course. So therefore, a lot of our traditions are very British traditions, but in the flip time zone. So for example, at Christmas, where it's boiling hot for us, we will still do a big traditional roast, like a very winter dish. We will still do for our Christmas. So yeah, it's crazy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So Joe, tell me a bit about you. Where do you hail from and what's your secret sauce?
So I'm from the UK, as we've mentioned already. So if anyone's ever drank Buxton mineral water, that's where I'm basically based. Grew up there, sort of living near there, sort of in the sticks. So yep, so been proper-ish northerner, I guess you'd say, in the UK. Mm-hmm. So yeah, been there for God Christ knows how long. Yeah, so in terms of what I do as well, it's really, I've sort of run, it's a bit strange really, so I've run a small consultancy practice, Gold Partner consultancy practice, obviously doing quite a lot with the Power Platform, Dynamics 365 and stuff like that, sort of doing two roles really, so doing a lot of direct consultancy, so hands-on technical work and things like that, but also trying to grow the practice. And so as I'm sure you probably know, small business, many hats, that's how it generally ends up, isn't it?
Exactly. So but when you're not working, what are you going to get up to? What's entertainment for you, and what do you do with family, friends, that type of thing when you're not head down at the office?
So big video game fan, probably go to the territory to a certain extent. So at the moment, really looking forward to The Last of Us 2, which is out on Friday. So that's going to keep me busy over the weekend. I'm really into history in a big way. So actually my undergraduate and postgraduate degrees were in history, nothing to do with IT whatsoever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So anything to do with the history, video games to do with history, I'm there like a shot. So reading, And then, yeah, films and TVs, really. So got caught up recently on latest episodes of Veep, which is a pretty good sitcom. But I've still not watched Rick and Morty yet. I keep saying I need to watch the latest Rick and Morty, but I've just not got around to it yet.
All right. So how then, being somebody that has a deep background in history and obviously enjoy the subject, how did you end up in technology?
So it's really strange. I think this is the case for a lot of people with when it comes to IT. You end up sort of falling into it. And what it tends to come down to is that you're that person on that day in the office who, when somebody says, oh, the printer's not working, you go over, you give it a quick restart, and everything's working again, and everyone's just like, wow, you know how to do this stuff, you're great with computers, let's give you a bit more. And then it just sort of rolls, and then suddenly you just wake up one day just like, oh, I've got a career in IT. Isn't that great?
Yeah. The transition to becoming a technologist, I find it's interesting, even in the Power App space, right? And you have a lot of people that are, for the first time, I suppose, playing with technology, getting up to speed with Power Apps, realizing they might be able to build, use Power Automate and automate something they do, or build an app that solves a kind of a regular mundane problem that they have in their business. And if they stay, you know, and they do, let's say, build a couple, all of a sudden, you know, in a 3 or 6 month period, they've transitioned to become technologists, right? They've actually kind of stepped over that. And I suppose in, you know, in the past, it was like you're saying, you know, you fixed IT stuff around the office or organization. But I'm wondering if that's transitioning now into app building, you know, that people are all of a sudden finding they're the ones that build the app, or they built the Excel spreadsheet to start with, and now, you know, they've transitioned into technologists.
Well, I think in IT, you're always trying to fix something, a business problem, a business area or something like that, you know, and that's what makes it both, you know, interesting but also challenging to a certain extent. I suppose as well, the thing I would say is that, you know, it's not necessarily as well something that you have to have, you know, the typical background to get into. So in terms of, you know, your university, computer science, you know, coding for a few years, and then suddenly, right, you're doing the dynamic stuff. You know, the thing about this stuff is that as long as you've got a good, you're willing to learn, you're willing to sort of expose yourself, get yourself chucked in the deep end a little bit, you know, and you may sometimes sink or swim with that. It can vary. But it's all about just getting stuck in and just being focused in terms of, okay, what can I build that's actually going to solve a business challenge and actually be quite fun and quite cool as well.
Yeah.
It's all about showing off to, you know, in a way, people like showing off in IT. People like to sort of build like little nice little solutions. Oh, look at this pretty thing I built, this app and stuff like that, you know. So really what I'd say is if you like to impress people, like to build great stuff, just get stuck in. Doesn't matter what your background is.
I like it. In this episode, you know, in chatting with you, last time I saw you present was in Norway from memory, which was last year.
Oh, what a weekend.
Yeah. We're both up there with Marius, and he had put on a gig, right, that a Saturday event. And one of the things I noticed is that you talk a lot about Azure and how that plays into Power Apps or any business apps, really. So I'd love to focus a bit on that and really kind of from the point of view, if someone's working in Power Apps, Power Automate, or Dynamics 365, and they're using these technologies, kind of what's some go-dos? What are the things that they need to kind of get up to speed in the Microsoft Azure space so that they can really round out and even perhaps provide a much more extensible story in what they're building? So does that sound all right? We discuss Azure for a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way I'd sort of like to sort of pitch Azure really. So let's just pretend a scenario here. So let's say you're at home, you're just twiddling your thumbs, you're wondering what to do. Suddenly you get a phone call through saying that, oh, you've got 30 guests coming and here's all the menu options. So you've got, somebody wants Wagyu steak, somebody is a vegan, so you need to be vegan options. Somebody wants, you know, a fish dish, all this sort of stuff. You've got this massive, massive sort of list of menus, all this stuff that you need to worry about. And you're just sat there sort of thinking, oh, how can I deal with this? How can I actually, you know, get everything built together? And most importantly, how can I actually, you know, not be breaking the bank here? You know, I only want just a little bit of the Wagyu steak just for, you know, for John or for Mary coming along. So when we think about Azure, it's like as if you, in that situation, you're going into the kitchen and you've just got shelves and shelves of everything that you need ready to sort of bring down. So, you know, okay, you want a bit of that really nice expensive Wagyu beef, you can bring that down from the shelf. You know, you want to sort of mix in some of those nice spices over there, maybe get a bit of caviar in, you know, you just grab what you need, and at the end of the night you're just going to get a bill that says, okay, you've used a little bit of that, you know, you've used, it's really great stuff, you've used just a bit of it, but you're only paying for what you've used. And the end result is that you've managed to bring everything down, you've cooked a fantastic meal, everyone's just absolutely loving it, brilliant, fantastic, come again, we love you, Michelin star on the post maybe. So that's really how I would sort of summarize Azure. It's having this fantastic sort of tool set at your disposal so you can actually do some pretty amazing and crazy things without necessarily needing to worry about, you know, paying huge amounts. A lot of the stuff on Azure these days is actually either free or consumption based. So you're not having to break the bank to get enterprise-grade tools as a small business. It's got global reach as a network. So as I say, you can get all these ingredients in global, you know, mix them into the pot, you know, have stuff, you know, we could set up something now in the UK and also have an equivalent resource set up in New Zealand, for example, get them talking to each other. It's fantastic, you know, and it's scalable, you know, so yeah. Take what you need, grow at your own pace. And it's interesting that when you think about some of the messaging coming out of the Power Platform with Dynamics, certainly from the licensing standpoint, when you're looking at the, you know, the attached model, so, you know, buy one license and then, you know, take what you need later on, whether it's service or, you know, project service automation or something like that. Mm-hmm, you know, Azure's been doing this for years. This is, you know, this is basically the bread and butter of Azure. Take what you need, you know, take really great stuff, but you're not paying breaking the bank to get it, you know. So that's my pitch for Azure, really.
Nice. So you mentioned consumption-based. Not everyone might know what consumption is. What do you mean by that, and how does it differ from, let's say, buying licensing for Power Apps?
So if we take an example, let's say, so you've got something in Azure called Logic Apps. So Logic Apps is what ultimately Power Automate uses underneath the hood. And so how Logic App pricing works is you pay based on the number of times effectively that the Logic App flow, whatever you want to call it, is executed. You know, and when you break that down, essentially on a per execution basis, you know, it's not even, you know, whole amounts of cents, pennies, etc. like that. So really, you know, you could have a, you know, an enterprise Logic App, you know, solution that's, you know, accepting requests, that's doing all this fancy integration stuff. But as long as you're only running it, let's say once or twice per day, you know, your bill at the end of the month is only going to be, you know, price of a cup of coffee, you know, at the best.
Gotcha. So you have these kind of enterprise class tools, but you're only paying if you use them. You're not paying them whether you use them or not. So like if you buy a Power App license, you'll get billed monthly. And if you don't use that license, you're still going to get billed, right?
This is it.
In a consumption base, you only get billed if you actually execute it in many cases.
Yeah. So it does vary a lot across the different services, but generally what you're finding, even the stuff that, you know, traditionally has been, okay, fine, a virtual machine, okay, fine, that's £30 a month, and it's always going to be roughly that. Even now you're finding, for example, with, so you can get Managed Azure SQL Database, that's now gone serverless. So again, you only pay for when somebody connects to the database, spins up, okay, it goes really quiet, spins down again, and you're not paying any more for it.
Yeah, nice. So let's say I'm totally green. I don't have any experience with Azure whatsoever. You know, I've built Power Apps, maybe a few flows in Power Automate, tried virtual agents and a Power BI. Where's my starting point with Azure? What if I was totally know nothing, where do I start?
What if I told you you're using Azure already as part of doing all that?
Okay.
Ah, see, yeah. So effectively, everything in the Power Platform in some shape or format, Dynamics 365, you know, there's going to be something sitting underneath in Azure that's powering it. So we already talked about Power Automate, the Logic Apps connector connection.
Correct.
You know, when you're logging in to Dynamics or, you know, the Power Apps portal, that's using Azure Active Directory underneath the hood. The Common Data Service Database is a Azure SQL database behind the scenes. So there's all these different things, really. You know, AI builder capabilities is leveraging Azure. So, you know, what I tend to say to people is that, you know, okay, well, fine, you're saying you're not familiar with Azure, but actually you are when you think about it. You know, making the jump across isn't sort of as big a step as you may sort of think it is. Now, that's not to say that Azure is, you know, isn't this huge, massive thing. You know, even I sometimes get lost down rabbit holes having to look things up because there is so much stuff there. But it's not something that you necessarily need to be too daunted about. And what's really great at the moment, what you're seeing coming from Microsoft, is that there's a lot more learning material out there. So
yeah,
a really great resource in terms of just to get a feel in terms of what you can do is, for example, the Microsoft Learn website. There's some really great modules and learning paths on there. Similar to what you get with the Dynamics 365 and Power Platform as well, you get free trial. So you can just sign up and get, I think it's something between £100 and £130 of credit that you can just go off and just spend on whatever you need. So really, you know, there's no real sort of barriers, really. It's just a case of just, you know, getting that trial set up, maybe just following a few learning paths and courses and just experimenting, you know. And in the Power Platform, when we're building up apps, when we're building our flows, we're doing already that to a certain extent already, you know, when we're building out these solutions, you know, these rapid solutions for businesses.
So let's say I'm a Power App builder and I want to extend my skills tomorrow, and I really want to go, okay, I want to get a working knowledge of what is possible in Azure. Do I go to azure.com? Where do I go? And kind of, obviously, because it's Active Directory, which is how you authenticate with Power Apps, also works with Azure, you're going to be able to sign in with whatever account you have, correct?
Yeah, it's just portal.azure.com. You need to go on there and set up a subscription. So as I say, you can have either a free trial, you can get a subscription through your... So if you're dealing with a managed provider, they can set up a subscription on your behalf and then bill you for that. You know, you can pay direct. All you need is a credit card just to get signed up and ready to go. And then boom, you've got your free trial, you've got your subscription there ready to go.
Yeah. So, you know, you talked about gaming before, and in gaming, particularly a lot of the apps that you can have on, you know, say, on an Apple device, a lot of the games these days are free, right? But what happens is that if you want to, you know, get the flash armor or the flash guns or something else, you buy credits, right? And you buy these credits and all of a sudden you're cranking through a bunch of cash. Is there any risk with Azure of doing the same thing? In other words, you put your credit card down and all of a sudden at the end of the month, you've left a server running at full capacity. And lo and behold, you've blown your credit limit on your credit card. Is there controls around that type of thing spinning out of control?
Yeah, so this is an area that they've been doing a lot of work with around sort of cost management and billing alerts. You know, so for example, you can set it up so that you get an email through. So if you go over a certain threshold, you'll get that alert straight away. You've got, you know, rich metrics at the Azure level that let you just go in and just basically say, okay, well, how much am I spending this month? You know, what resources are actually consuming the most each month as well? So if you have, you know, left something on accidentally, you know, you can, you know, pretty quickly sort of determine what it is and get it fixed. So typically, if you're working with things like virtual machines or maybe stuff where there's more of a fixed sort of price tag around it because it needs to be always be on, then yeah, the risk is always going to be there to spend more. For the most part, for most of your resources, what you'll typically find, there'll also be developer tiers as well. So those will either be free or close to free in terms of what they're doing. So again, just for small experimentations, they're always worth sort of going for, because that way, you know, you're getting some really great stuff. You'll be limited in terms of what you can do, but it's not going to be that much of a headroom if you're just experimenting for the first time.
Yeah. And so let's say I'm consulting in this space and I'm working, you know, I'm building, once again, Power Apps, Flows, those type of things. If I was to round out, let's say I wanted to really round out my skill set, you know, do I need to go in and, for example, should I get up to speed and really understand Active Directory, you know, which is AAD, Azure Active Directory? What would your recommended path of increasing your knowledge specifically for somebody coming new to Azure? What is kind of some core foundational skills they really need to understand, nail, whether it's around security, permissions, resource groups, that type of thing? What's the kind of What's your recommendation around go do, learn this about Azure, do the training courses on Learn, you know, use the free trials to try what you're learning, go to, you know, Microsoft Docs, and what would your recommendation be?
So if we look first of all at Power Apps as a good example, so, you know, if you wanted to, you know, supercharge or do a bit more with Power Apps, then the great thing is that you've got a lot of connectors and, you know, tools there to be able to plug into Azure services directly. You know, so as an example, you know, let's say, you know, you want to connect to an Azure SQL database. You know, maybe you've got, you just need to have a SQL database there for some integration, maybe, you know, just sort of, yeah, as a fit gap thing for something that CDS can't do. So you've got a full-blown connector on there that you can use, bring the data in and things like that. They've also got support now for lots of different services as well. So if you're wanting to do more with cognitive services, so cognitive services is actually a really cool solution just to play about with. You've got a rich set of APIs there that essentially you can just set up a web endpoint in Azure. It's free for the first 10,000 requests. And you can do some really cool things such as, you know, sending images across to it to basically detect what's in there, get classification back, send, you know, a section of text across and get sentiment from that, sentiment analysis. They've got some facial recognition tools and things like that. So again, that's stuff that you can bring in to the Power App, maybe just add on an additional snippet onto there, call it out an external service and things like that. Another consideration as well, when we think about today in terms of the common data service storage, you know, sure, a lot of people are feeling some pressures at the moment, given that the changes and stuff like that, you know, maybe they're finding that their, you know, file storage is, you know, isn't quite, they're going to need more basically because of how it's all sort of changed. So the great thing that you can do potentially is hooking Azure storage as an option. So maybe if you haven't got SharePoint or something like that, you know, again, storage on Azure is, you know, potentially dirt cheap when it comes to at the per gigabyte level. So again, what you can look at, you can change things so that, okay, I'm going to move all my attachments, my documents, they're going to be stored in Azure as blob storage documents. And again, we can just retrieve those back. You know, it ticks all the boxes in terms of, you know, being secure at rest, HTTPS, all that sort of jazz. There's some really great things around that. So, you know, potentially you don't, I think what may be quite daunting about Azure for the first time when you're looking at it is that, okay, well, I need to be a pro dev here. You know, I need to, you know how to code, I need to know how to do all this, you know, all this fancy stuff like DevOps and stuff like that to do that. But it's probably not the case at all. You know, as I say, if you've got a If you've got a credit card, you've got your Office 365 login ready to go, and you're using the Azure portal, you just follow the wizards, the setup steps, and boom, you can start to just deploy and provision stuff at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. So let's understand some terms here for people, getting up to speed around Azure. You mentioned DevOps just then. Tell us a bit about what DevOps is. How would you explain it to a layperson and why DevOps is important and how that plays into the Azure story?
Oh, it's a million-dollar question. So,
Yeah.
DevOps can mean anything to everything. It's potentially around a culture to a certain extent. If we're talking specifically about DevOps in Azure, it's all about providing you with the tools to, do things such as application lifecycle management, automation, words such as, continuous integration. So making sure that people are not breaking stuff as part of, changing things and stuff like that. Work prioritization. So, if you're working, if you've got an agile process in your team, you're working to Scrum or sprints and stuff like that, you can, set up work items, you can document things using wikis and things like that. So DevOps is really about where, if you're in a situation where you need to start doing more, slightly more complicated, deployments of your solution. So you're moving away from a world where, okay, at 10 p.m. at night, poor old Bill for the fourth time in a week is having to go on and extract the solution at midnight to import it into the production environment, and he's sort of sat there praying and hoping that it's not going to break or something's going to go wrong. It's all about removing that and instead automating it. Automation is king, for numerous reasons. You can reduce the risk of potential failure, you get greater predictability, greater speed as well, because again, you're not reliant on, an individual or a person to be able to get stuff deployed out. It's literally okay. As soon as somebody presses a button, checks in the changes, boom, it goes off, deploys it all out, runs all your automated tests, and then hopefully it all comes back with a thumbs up saying, yep, this is ready to go. Press the button, boom, in production.
Nice. Another term for our listeners here, and that I'd like you to explain in layman terms as much as possible, is the Azure Service Bus.
Yeah, so typically for the service bus in the context of Dynamics 365 is when you're wanting to offload, heavy processing, server-side processing of code out into Azure, whether in terms of just, the actual core processing of it or just to maybe hand it off to external services. So this is really important these days because of what you're seeing in terms of, well, I guess it's been important for a number of years because as a developer, if you're familiar with writing plugins for the online world, you know all about sandbox limitations, 2-minute limitations, all the restrictions around potential, DLLs and things like that, executing in sandbox mode. But now we also consider in terms of, API limits and things like that, potentially, it's going to become desirable to look at offloading as much stuff from the Dynamics 365 server level. So effectively, you're trying to abstract out that complex logic and get it into a place and an environment where it can scale and do what it needs you to do.
So, can you give us a real world scenario where you'd typically use a service bus, the Azure service bus?
Ooh, good question. So I think it would be, so let's say you need to do batch processing, let's say, on, many hundreds of millions of records. You need to do that sort of on a fairly regular basis. Yes, maybe it's just bulk updates. Maybe you need to go off and call an external service. I think it'll be for those sort of situations where you would look at doing it. To be fair, it's not something that I've sort of used in the wild myself. It's obviously something that I'm aware of and can sort of speak about and look into. But it's generally for those types of situations where the headroom, you've reached the headroom in Dynamics
Yeah,
or
yeah,
CDS.
yeah. So I've commonly, seen it around scenarios where all of a sudden a lot of information is coming in. Let's say, practically, let's say from a website, let's say the government is doing a scenario where they're running a census, and they've got literally hundreds of thousands of people hitting a census form online, and that data is coming in, and they might add that to a queue, or a cell tower might be having, a lot of traffic hitting it, and they need to queue that traffic. And so they'll put it into a service bus to make sure it all, if you like, nothing's lost, nothing's dropped, but it continues on its path to wherever it should be. And then IoT is another big, use, the Internet of Things, which you can have signals coming in from many, many devices at any time. And you need to make sure you never drop a signal. It's handled in an orderly way, like you're talking about headroom, that you've got their capacity to make sure nothing gets lost or dropped. Tell me about data lakes and from your point of view, where do Azure data lakes come into play?
So they're fairly new. So, you know, typically when you think about data lakes, it's for that big data processing type scenarios. So the great thing that we've got now in the common data service is that we can actually stream out our data into a data lake location. They're effectively exported out into a blob storage, into sort of a variety of different JSON files and stuff like that. As part of that, we've got capabilities around being able to sort of see how the data's changed. You know, we get sort of delta log shipping and stuff like that. So really, that's when you start getting in the people with the really exotic titles like data scientist or data modeler or things like that. You know, they love data lakes. They'll be dipping in and out of those all day, I think.
So tell me then about Azure Data Factory.
So Azure Data Factory. So this is an area which I'm doing a hell of a lot of work in at the moment. And I think it's going to become a lot more important in the sort of years ahead. So traditionally, you know, if you're doing any sort of complex data integration or things like that involving Dynamics, you would probably be using something like maybe SQL Server integration services with a bit of Kingsway soft factored into it. You might be using maybe Scribe Online or something like that. You know, and those solutions are really great. They're fantastic. But there's two issues around them, really. You have, number one, potentially price point, additional cost around licensing that you need to factor in. And also, they don't fit in terms of, you know, being in a sort of cloud first world these days.
They're typically run like on a server, right? You'd need a server of some sort to run those.
Full-blown SQL Server with Windows Server on top of it, all that sort of stuff. You know, so I don't know about you, but these days, anything where I'm having to, you know, manage, you know, bare metal fabric servers is just a massive pain point in terms of time and effort and stuff like that. We want to be in a situation where we can get rid of that. So the great thing about Azure Data Factory is that it's the new SSIS. You know, it lets you do all the capabilities that traditionally SSIS could do. You could even lift and shift your packages straight onto Azure, run them in there in a managed environment, and you're good to go. But it supports the connectability. It's got all the connectivity into a variety of cloud services. You know, so Common Data Service, Dynamics 365 is one of them. You could even, you know, go over the fence across into things such as SAP or Salesforce or things like that. And it's built for the modern tools that developers, you know, want and are using, you know, to help get things out faster. So it's got full integration with Azure DevOps. Everything is stored as sort of template JSON template files. So again, you can just press a button, extract that out, deploy it out to where you need to. You've got capabilities to hook into things such as, you know, Azure Databricks for really sort of advanced processing, use a Python and things like that. So really now, you know, projects that I'm involved with a lot are now Data Factory sort of coming to its element. It had a bit of a rocky start. I think similar to the Common Data Service, you had a version 1, which was a little bit to be desired, but version 2 has sort of come along and this is now, you know, there's going to be a lot of drive and effort to move across traditional workloads to it, because I think from a pricing standpoint at the moment, it just works. So again, as we discussed already, it's consumption based. You're potentially just paying, you know, a couple of pounds per month or dollars, whatever, just to basically run very simple packages, you know, and for your one-off migrations and things like that, it's certainly going to be a lot cheaper compared to setting up SSIS and licenses and things like that.
Yeah. So the last one I want to touch on when it comes to Azure is PowerShell scripts. And tell me, you know, what are they first of all? And then why are they important for maintaining and kind of becoming more efficient, I suppose, in the use of Azure and where it plays with Power Apps and Dynamics?
So PowerShell has been around for donkey's years now. Typically, if you've done anything with Windows Server, you've probably written a couple of scripts for that. But nowadays, PowerShell is actually one of the main tools that you can use to write commands targeting Azure. So whether it's, okay, I just want to maybe just get a list of all my resources at a subscription level, I want to enable a certain feature on a resource, I want to actually deploy out all my resources, PowerShell lets you do that. So alongside tools such as the CLI and Azure Resource Manager templates, PowerShell is a really handy tool for you to have. And a sort of a good tip as well, if you are starting out with PowerShell development in Azure, make sure you're using the AZ modules, which are sort of the new and supported way of doing things. They're basically, the previous modules were had a bit more verbose naming, whereas this one is a bit more succinct. So your fingers will thank me when you're typing commands out.
Excellent, excellent. So once again, if someone in our industry, you know, is wanting to develop their skills, When it comes to, you know, getting certified, you know, a lot of people have got their, you know, MB200, they've got their various certifications around Power Apps and the Power Platform. What if they want to extend their kind of, what's that kind of a logical extension of their skills into the Azure space? What should they be looking at from these are the courses, these are the certifications they should consider?
So Azure was the sort of the lucky or the unlucky one in that they were the first ones to sort of undergo the whole role-based certification change around. So you've now got a complete set across Azure of different certifications that cover, you know, many different roles. So whether you're just, you know, doing a little bit on the side, you need to just be aware of it in terms of talking to customers, or whether you just want to go in, you know, go in full throttle and, you know, become a Azure solution architect. That's a really nice title. I'm not going to, you know, so and a perfectly admirable thing to sort of aim for. So you've got a whole range of different exams that are available ready today. So a really good one to start off with is the AZ900 Azure Fundamentals. That's going to equip you with the basics. It's going to hopefully get you well prepared. So if you are, you know, hit with a question about Azure, you can sort of, you know, very quickly sort of give an acceptable answer in terms of, okay, well, maybe you should be looking over there or at that over there. Moving beyond that, when we start to think about some of the other exams, the DP201 exam is potentially a really good one to look at. So that's all around building and designing Azure data solutions. So typically, if we're extending out Dynamics in some fashion, so whether, for example, we're exporting out into Data Lake using the Data Export Service to chuck it out into a SQL database, you know, all of that is going to be using the types of things that this exam covers. So having a good awareness in terms of how you can integrate additional data sources and, you know, build a really comprehensive, you know, let's say BI tool, BI solution that sits on top of CDS, this exam is going to cover you. And then one which looks actually really interesting, I might have to say it myself at some point, AI 100, designing and implementing an Azure AI solution.
Okay.
So this is probably going to get into a bit more deeper stuff than the AI builder that you've got in the Power Apps at the moment. But it's going to be looking at all sorts of really fun and cool things, I imagine, such as machine learning, cognitive services, you know, lots of really good stuff. And AI is going to be really huge. You know, if you follow Microsoft closely, you know, if you've read Satya Nadella's book, Hit Refresh, a couple of years ago, AI is one of their biggest areas at the moment, which is why it's in the Power Platform, which is why it's so prominently in Azure. So really getting yourself equipped with the skills and being able to build those type of solutions and know how they can integrate alongside the Power Platform is only going to serve you well.
Nice, nice. As we wrap up on the subject of Azure, is there any kind of general tips and tricks that you recommend for folks listening?
It's really just don't be daunted. Just don't be afraid of sort of jumping in. It's, you know, as I said already, it's a huge area. There's lots of stuff in there. I think just accept early on that, you know, as with Dynamics and Power Platform, to a certain extent, you can't really be a master of everything. You know, the beauty of the cloud, if you want to call it that, is that it's constantly changing. You know, so trying to become an expert and in one particular area is just going to be impossible because things are just going to change far too quickly. So just don't be daunted. Just get stuck in and accept that you're not going to learn everything. You're not going to be an expert. Another thing in terms of, you know, the great thing of what I find about not just the business applications community, but also the Azure community, is that you've got so many fantastic people who are doing stuff with Azure every day. They're blogging, they're talking about it and things like that. You know, so some shout out to some really good people to sort of follow in the business application space who are doing some great stuff with Azure. You've got the likes of Nishant Rana, Carl D'Souza, Tricia Sinclair, who does everything to do with DevOps, Jordi Montana, for example. These are all really great people to follow. And again, they'll be coming in from a business application standpoint, but they'll also be trickling in the Azure as well. So they'll help guide you into it. And there'll be some really great content out there. And just don't be afraid to ask, you know, certainly what I find with the business applications community at the most is everyone is really welcoming and friendly. You know, there's no such thing as a stupid question. So just get stuck in, you know, ask the question, somebody will be around to help you out and things like that. And again, you know, we touched upon it a few times already. Microsoft Learn is going to be the go-to resource to sort of see sort of the latest content that's happening around there. You're going to get suggestions around learning paths based on your particular role or business function. And it's going to be an important tool for you to use as you're preparing to potentially sit the exams.
Yeah, I like it.
And then finally as well, another great thing about Azure is that, you know, ever since, you know, the acquisition of GitHub, you know, there's so many samples on GitHub. So pretty much for every potential scenario that you've got, you'll typically be able to go on GitHub, find a corresponding repository with extensive code samples, If there's a problem with that, you can raise an issue, you can lock a ticket, there'll be somebody from the product team who comes back and maybe answers it or points you in the right direction. So explore GitHub and use what you've got on there to help, augment your learning. Just download a sample, follow the instructions, run, build it out, boom. Oh, wow, it all works. That's how you get stuck in.
Now, you mentioned the community and a bunch of people's names. And as I say, at the start of the show, see you present in Norway and, of course, multiple times in the London user group scene there. What do you recommend around the process of preparing to do a presentation at a user group or a Saturday type of event? And I suppose, not just a recommendation, what's the process that you go through of putting your presentations together to make sure that that you're engaging the audience, that you're sharing knowledge, and that those that are coming along and listening are really getting value?
So typically I try and get some sort of demo involved. It's always good just to sort of see the stuff in action, maybe try and have a bit of a story around that if you can. It's really good as well just to make sure that you're running through things at least once yourself. So whether it's just, in front of your own computer, recording yourself, or, doing it with family members or things like that, it's really important just to test your style. And again, just focus in terms of around the delivery, get to the point, focus on the core messages that you want to get out of each session. And again, as part of that, in most cases, people will be. I think what I find is, when you're entering a room, a presentation, in most cases, 90, 95% of the people there, they're not waiting for you to mess up or screw up or cause a mistake. So they can go, ha ha, you're stupid, you're an idiot, la la la. They generally are there supporting you. They want you to do well, and they'll respond well to you as long as you just open up and just sort of let them in as part of that. So just take that in your stride to a certain extent. Interact with the audience, make sure you've got plenty of time for sort of questions and things like that, and you won't have any problems at all. But it's all about doing that first step, first of all. Everyone's done the first presentation, haven't they? Where they've stood up for the first time, probably, God, I sound like a bloody idiot, or I did this wrong, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we've all been there.
So good, Joe.
And if you're not sweating like a maniac before and after your 60th, 80th, however many presentation is, then yeah, I think you're doing something wrong, in my books at least. So
nice. And before we're going to wrap up with some random questions I'm going to throw you away, but what's the best bit of career advice you've ever received?
Oh god, that's a really good question. I'm just trying to think now. So I think it was so I did some work experience. It is when you're a teenager, you're dabbling around with different options and careers and stuff like that. So I dabbled with sort of doing the law career potentially. So I did some work experience around solicitor, being a lawyer, all that sort of stuff. And one of the barristers I was with, he gave me the best advice he actually gave me was that when it comes to, if you're going off to university, if you decide, okay, I want to go to university, I want to go to college, I want to get a higher education degree, do what you want to do there. Don't focus too much in terms of, okay, I need to get this degree because I want to have this career type thing or want to do this or stuff like that. If you're going to go to university and educate yourself to that sort of level, go there, do what you want. Enjoy your time there. And afterwards with the career, you'll figure it out somewhere.
I like it. Okay, you ready for some quick fire questions?
Let's do it.
These are random from all over the place. First of all, what's the last thing you bought for under $50 that you love and use often?
Well, at the moment, actually, I don't know what it is. I had my 30th last year, and ever since then, I've been obsessed with lager. So the last thing that I've ordered that I've been using a lot, i.e. drinking, usually on the weekends, I'm a good boy and all that sort of stuff, Brewdog Lost Lager.
Nice.
Lost Lager. I just don't know what it is. It's like a... I'm getting a bit worried because it feels like a bit of an illicit love affair to a certain extent. So I'll get bored of it, I think, in a month or so. But yeah, it's got to be that, I think.
I love it. If you could buy your dream house, what's one weird feature or room that you'd want in it?
Oh, I've got to have some sort of gaming room. And I think I'd probably have to have, those retro arcade machines. I'd have to get either like a MAME cabinet or something like that, something like maybe Pac-Man or Asteroids or something like that. So yeah, just a full-on game room, massive TV, brilliant.
A man cave. Okay, who had the most influence on you growing up?
Probably my mum, actually. I think she's always been there. She's always supported the whole family, really, in terms of what we've done. Always never pushy, never doing pressure and stuff like that, just letting us grow and develop and things like that. And yeah, she's been through a lot as well. So yeah, definitely say my mum.
I like it. Would you rather win a Grammy, an Oscar, or a BAFTA?
I've got to say a BAFTA, haven't I? Being UK-based. It'd be a
totally.
Betrayal of whys, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Who's the worst boss you've ever had and why?
Oh, I've got to be careful here. Yeah, so I did have one boss once, yeah. Just wasn't. So when you're looking at things like agile and things like that, there's a really great concept that they talk about. It's all about being a servant leader. You know, so if you're in a senior position, you should always be sort of there, ready to help, support, and assist people, you know. And effectively, you are at the disposal of the people sort of below you in terms of what you need. You should always be sort of be humble to that degree. So the best bosses I've ever had have always adopted that standpoint. They've always embraced that and things like that. I've had experiences where that hasn't been the case, where it's been the complete opposite. And, you know, in terms of what it does for a team, in terms of morale, what it does in terms of career development, you know, potentially for people, you know, people end up leaving, you know, careers as a result of it. They go, well, sod this, I don't want to work in this career anymore because I've had this experience or this boss, etc. So yeah, I'm gonna be a little bit cagey on that one, and I'll just sort of say,
no, that's good.
If you're in a position of authority, people are always watching you. Be the servant leader.
It's good. Final question: what do you regret not doing when you were younger?
I think I probably should have traveled a bit more. I think probably should have done the whole gap year thing and stuff like that. So it'd be nice to travel. Be nice to go to, like, you know, Australasia or Far East and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely travel. I think there's still plenty of time to do that though. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, let's hope after COVID and everything, of course.
Yes, of course.
Who do you recommend as a guest for the show in future?
Who I'd like to recommend?
Yeah, to come on the show.
I think you should speak to Matt Collins-Jones. So he's somebody I know quite well, also from the UK community. What that guy doesn't know about power to make flows isn't worth talking about. So I'm sure he'll be able to educate your listeners on, you know, the importance of power to make flows, why you should be using them, the capabilities and all that sort of stuff. I think he's really passionate as well about it, which is always, you know, fantastic.
I love it. Joe, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. If people want to follow what you're doing on social media, that type of thing, where can they find you?
I'm big on Twitter, really big on Twitter. So JJ Griffin, so give me a follow on that. Reach out to me on LinkedIn as well. If you've got any questions around Azure or just looking to get started, then yeah, happy to have a call or have a chat with you, see what we can do to get you all ready and going.
Hey, thanks again for joining us on today's Power Platform show. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Remember, full show notes can be found at nz365guy.com/226. I'm your host, Business Applications MVP Mark Smith, otherwise known as the NZ365 Guy. If you've got any comments or feedback, I'd love to hear from you. Reach out to me on LinkedIn's the best way to get hold of me. Stay safe. Ciao for now.